conceive what indignities serfs had to suffer. Most of all, Ilya believed in Volkonsky. So he would do it. He would clean vomit tonight and recruit men tomorrow. And when the revolt came, he would stand behind Volkonsky, even if it meant no longer serving by Pasha's side. Chapter 37. As soon as Vika left Pasha and stepped out of the Winter Palace, she whistled into the dark sky, a long melodic summons. A few minutes later, an albino rat appeared on the cobblestones at Vika's feet. She knelt and scooped Poslanik up onto her shoulder. They didn't have to wait long for the hum of moth's wings and the hiss of all the city's stray cats to fill the air. Vika circled her pinky over them and made the enchantment permanent this time, so that they would be able to understand each other without the need for additional magic every time.
"I need you to find Nikolai," Vika told them. "He's cast a barrier over himself, so I can't trace his magic. You might be able to find him, though. It's not as if he's invisible, just stealthy. But so are all of you. You'll be much faster than I am, traipsing through the streets and alleys and bridges on my own."
Poslanik, who acted as general of this army, squeaked his assent to her command.
"Oh, one more thing," Vika said. "Nikolai is a shadow now, so don't look for an intact person."
The moths batted their wings and the cats hissed in understanding. But Vika shuddered as what she'd said resonated fully, for it was true in a horrible sense, wasn't it? Nikolai was not intact. He'd been broken, and it was as if a jagged shard of his soul was leading the remainder of him. And now, just as the tea leaves had predicted, Vika was fighting against him, trying to trap him, ushering in death once again. But it had to be done. Nikolai's threats were not abstract anymore, and Russia's future teetered on what Vika did. She would find him, put him somewhere safe only she could access, and then save him. Somehow.
"Well, perhaps I can just focus on the first and second steps now, and deal with the third later."
Vika waved her arm in the air, and thousands of moths flew off all at once, the noise of their wings like a forest shedding its leaves all at once. The moths filled the sky, first as a white cloud blocking out the moon, and then they spread out, a net cast over St. Petersburg in a hunt for a shadow boy. The hair on the backs of the cats stood on end, and they scratched at the icy cobblestones at their feet. Vika nodded at Poslanik. He squeaked a series of commands, and then the cats screeched and bolted out of Palace Square in every direction, a beautiful pandemonium of determination.
"I hope Nikolai surrenders easily,"
Vika thought, as she watched the last of Poslanik's army go. But what were the odds of that? Absolutely none. When the sound of her army dissipated, though, it was not quiet that fell upon the night, but pandemonium of a different kind. Shouts, deep, rhythmic, and unified. They were not far away, possibly on the Nivar, where the disastrous fate had been. Vika evanesced herself to the frozen river. She gaped at the detritus of Nikolai's party, not only tables covered with leftover food dripping off their dishes and overturned chairs, but also decapitated dolls with their heads smashed in. It was like the state of Nikolai's soul, laid bare on the ice. There was also a crowd gathered on the embankment. They formed a circle, surrounding something Vika couldn't quite see, but their chanting was unmistakable.
"Burn the witch! Burn the witch! Burn the witch!"
Vika gasped and ducked behind a nearby tree. This was what Sergei had warned her about when she was young, that normal people would not be able to understand magic, that their fear would propel them against her. And it was Vika they wanted to burn, not Nikolai, for she'd convinced Pasha and Yuliana that it was better not to reveal the existence of another enchanter, because the city was frightened enough of one. Hence, Vika shouldered the blame, again, for what Nikolai had done. But it was to protect him, and to keep some semblance of sanity in the Empire. Vika was not sure if the latter was working. A girl's scream pierced through the mob's shouts.
Let me go! I'm not the witch! Someone help!
Tie her tighter! A man yelled. Don't believe her lies!
Oh, mercy. They're trying to burn someone else in my place.
Vika spun away from the tree and hurtled toward the mob. She probably should have cast a shroud around herself, a disguise or at least less identifiable hair. But all she could think about at the moment was getting to the girl. The crowd was larger than she'd initially thought. They formed a tight-knit ring, 6 to 7 people deep. Vika tried to shove them aside, but was met with snarls and elbows. One of the men she attempted to push away glared at her. But when he looked at her, or more likely recognized the black stripe in her red hair, he grabbed her arm.
You!
Vika jerked back, but his grip tightened.
You're the witch! You're the one who has my Misha vomiting blood tonight!
It's not my fault,
Vika said. Not that he would believe her.
But it's not that girl's either. And I have to stop them from burning her before it's too late. Release me!
The man spit in Vika's face.
You're not going anywhere. And for all we know, that's your sister at the stake. Better to burn her just in case than to be sorry.
Vika charmed the spit off her cheek and flung it back at the man's face. He yelped.
I respectfully disagree on both counts, Vika said. It is not better to kill someone just in case, and I am absolutely going somewhere.
With that, she commanded the wind to rush at her assailant, and it lifted him off his feet, hurling him onto a snowbank several yards away. The string of profanities he shouted at Vika were equally blown away. And then she evanesced into the center of the mob. They cried out as she rematerialized.
It's another witch! The girl has called her kin!
Vika stepped between the red-haired girl, who was tied to one of Nikolai's upended tables, surrounded by broken chair legs and the hysterical crowd.
You poor thing, she said to the girl. To be born looking like me. But don't worry, I'll get you out of here safely.
Vika conjured an iridescent bubble around herself and the pyre, and she charmed the ropes that lashed the girl to the firewood to come undone. The girl fell to her knees. Silent tears and snot streamed down her face, and her entire body shook. The mop pounded on the outside of Vika's bubble shield. Vika wrapped her arms around the girl.
You're safe now.
The girl shook her head.
I put up an enchantment to protect us.
But what about after you're gone?
The girl's voice was so hoarse, it was more like scratches on dry air than proper words.
You can't hide from us forever!
A woman punching at the shield yelled. A man opposite her shouted,
The Lord will bring justice! Beware, daughters of the devil!
Vika looked from them back to the girl.
Where do you need to go? Do you have family? I'll take you where you feel secure.
The girl shook her head again.
They won't stop at me. Everyone who looks like this.
She tore at her hair. It was plastered against her head by tears and sweat, the dampness making it all the redder.
We're doomed.
Vika touched her own hair. What was she to do? She couldn't change the color of every red-haired girl in Russia. Besides the impossibility of so large an enchantment, it would also be held as evidence against the girls of their witchcraft. Vika had to capture Nikolai soon. His dark magic had to be stopped. It was the only way to end this.
Come on,
Vika said, gathering the girl closer to her chest.
We're leaving.
But what about them?
The crowd had begun to stab at the bubble shield with knives, sticks, anything sharp they could find. Vika looked at the mob. If only she could distract them. But what could possibly steal the attention of a crowd intent on killing witches? More witches. Vika chewed on her lip. She'd never conjured illusions before, yet she had just cast a permanent shield around Pasha, or hoped she had, and she'd never done that before either. Ironically, it was the people's new belief in magic that was fueling Bolshevnoi Duplo to generate more power, which in turn allowed Vika to cast stronger enchantments to use against the very people who feared them.
"I don't know if this will work, but it's worth a try," she said.
She plucked a hair out of her own head and waved her arm at the smoke billowing off the base of the pyre. Vika tossed the hair into it, and the smoke swirled into the shape of a girl with a head full of wavy red hair. Vika commanded the wind to blow through the smoke girl, breaking it into tiny puffs and carrying it to the outside of the mob circle. There, each puff expanded into a full-size illusion of a girl made of flesh and blood, not smoke. The crowd was suddenly surrounded by dozens of witches. The people screamed,
"It's an entire coven!"
"The devil has brought his army!"
"Everyone, fight back!"
In their panic, they turned away from the pyre and lunged at the new witches who had appeared. Vika leaned toward the girl.
"They'll be occupied for a few minutes. Tell me where we should go."
The girl trembled.
"Lake Ladaga,"
she whispered.
"My aunt has a Daka in the woods." "All right, then. Don't be alarmed. I'm going to dissolve us into tiny bubbles in order to transport us there."
The girl didn't even flinch. Vika doubted much else could compare to the horror of being nearly burned alive on a pyre. Vika took one more look at the red-faced crowd around her, battling an imaginary enemy. Then she evanesced herself and the girl away. Chapter 38. In other parts of the Empire, the growth of Bolshevnoi Duplo's magic manifested itself in wilder ways. In the middle of the Siberian woods, a dilapidated hut shook as if it were a bird ruffling its feathers. Its two front windows blinked, shaking off the dirt and moss that had accumulated on its sills during the centuries the house had slept. Beneath the foundation, stilt-like chicken legs stretched and lifted the entire hut 20 feet off the snow-covered floor. The joints of the chicken legs, and of the hut itself, creaked as they began to stomp through the forest. Baba Yaga's house was awake. Now it needed to find its owner. Then they could begin tricking and eating unsuspecting travelers again. On the Kamchatka Peninsula in the Far East, volcano nymphs grinned with needle-like teeth and danced, their lithe, naked red bodies like flames in a bonfire. The frosty ground around them quaked, and their volcanoes spewed smoke and ash. The craters had been dormant for hundreds of years, since their caretakers, the nymphs, had not had enough magic to stoke the fires in the volcano's bellies. But now, by some miracle, they did. And as the air above them clouded red-gray, the nymphs laughed and drank blue honeysuckle wine and felt giddy with the knowledge that one day, hopefully soon, they would be strong enough to make the volcanoes erupt, to chase away the humans who dared to build villages and encroach on what was the nymphs' land. In the southern part of the empire, along the Volga River, a peasant boy trudged out of his family's cottage to fetch water. He shivered in the winter chill, and it was difficult to see, because the moon barely shone through the cloud cover. But the boy pushed onward. His mother had been ill for days, and she desperately needed more to drink. The pitchers in the cottage were empty. This task could not wait until daylight. The boy set down his bucket on the riverbank and began to chip at the ice with a pickaxe. It should have taken him a long while to get through the river's surface, and yet, 3 swings in, the ice cracked and parted. Water gushed upward, as if it had been waiting for the boy to free it. He hurriedly pressed the lip of his bucket into the water before it froze over again. When the bucket was full, the boy hauled it out of the river. He turned away. He lifted a snowy boot in the direction of his home. There was a sudden loud crack behind him. But there had been no one else out on the river. As the boy spun around to see what had happened, a giant catfish burst out of the Volga. Its head alone was larger than the boy. Bedraggled strands of what appeared to be algae hung and glistened from the monster's head. It glared at the boy's bucket. The boy dropped the bucket and ran as fast as he could through the snow. He didn't stop until he'd reached home and barricaded the door. Because he remembered the fables his grandfather had told him. When the moon is in the sky, the river belongs to Vojinoi, the catfish king. And Vojinoi did not look kindly upon those who tried to steal from his kingdom. Chapter 39. At 2 in the morning, there was a quiet knock at the door of the shack behind the black moth.
Nikolai? It's me.
He rolled over slowly in bed, where he'd been half asleep, nursing a splitting headache.
Renata? Yes. Can I come in?
He glanced over at the other bed. He'd eventually managed to conjure the second mattress he needed. It would be uncomfortable to have Renata here with Aijana in the room. But his mother wasn't there. Nikolai wasn't surprised. She was a creature of the night, and she often roamed the streets when it was dark. Nikolai climbed out of bed and started to comb his hair into place, but he stopped abruptly when he caught a glimpse of himself in the mirror above the washbasin. It didn't matter if his hair was neat or messy, because the shape of it was the same anyway. A splotchy blur. And his face. He could practically see through it, for it was light grey now rather than charcoal black.
Mon Dieu!
How had he faded so much? He was even weaker than last night after the fete. Nikolai slumped. He took a hat off the nearby rack and set it atop his head. The hat too was grey, but at least it had a defined shape. He flicked his wrist and the lock on the door unlatched with a click. Renata rushed in, all braids and smiles. She threw her arms around him. He held her, and she melted into his chest. Or rather, Nikolai melted into hers, damn it, because his edges weren't solid. But as soon as she touched him, he felt a bit better. And he warmed as he realized it was rather intimate, being so close. Nikolai flushed, which probably showed as the tips of his ears shading a touch darker, and pulled away.
I went looking for you, he said. But Galina, the harpy, had fired you. Where did you go? Are you all right?
Renata nodded, still smiling and holding lightly onto Nikolai's arms.
I'm fine. I have a job at Madame Boulanger. I just finished up for the night, and I'm sleeping on the floor in one of the girls' quarters. You're sleeping on the floor?
Nikolai flung his hands in the air, inadvertently tossing Renata's off.
It's all right. I have plenty of blankets, and a place next to the fire to keep me warm. Really, it's better than I could have hoped. But you...
She reached out to touch his arm again.
Nikolai, you're still a shadow.
He sighed.
You need more energy.
He shook his head and scrubbed at the back of his neck. Did she know he was behind the party and all the illness that followed? That was why he was so weak? But Renata didn't say anything, and Nikolai decided not to either. She was the only person he cared about that he had left. As destructive as he'd felt of late, he needed someone right now, besides Aijana, to still be on his side.
It's not just that I'm a shadow, Nikolai said. I'm fading. Literally. I don't know what to do. You can take energy from me.
Renata nodded to encourage him.
What? No. I'll give you all you need.
Nikolai retreated to the other side of the room.
I can't. I won't. Vika's mentor died because he channeled all his energy to her. And I nearly died at the end of the game, trying to save Vika, even though I thought I knew what I was doing. I won't accidentally kill you.
I wouldn't be able to live with myself afterward.
Renata marched over to him, cornering Nikolai by the washbasin. She grabbed his hand and placed his fingers on her neck. She leaned into him.
Please, I want to do this for you.
Then she met his gaze and held it steady, steadier than he'd ever seen her dare to hold it before.
And I want to do this for me.
Nikolai flushed again, as his body blurred into hers where they touched. He was a conundrum. Ethereal enough that their edges blended, yet corporeal enough that she did not pass straight through him.
Renata!
She placed a finger over his lips.
Nikolai, I love you. Let me do this.
He held his breath. He should say no again, but he wanted to say yes, too. He could already sense her energy beneath her skin, pulsing and yearning, and he was so empty. Instead of saying yes or no, Nikolai said nothing at all. Renata lifted her chin and brought his head down to meet hers. Nikolai's heartbeat quickened.
I do need more energy, he thought. I can't generate enough on my own if I want another chance at Pasha and the throne.
Renata brushed her lips just barely over his. And then Nikolai's mouth was on hers, gentle but full of wanting. He shouldn't be doing this, not when he knew his love belonged to another girl, with whom his heart ached even now to dance another mazurka. But that girl had chosen Pasha, and here, in his arms, was Renata, insistent yet yielding, and offering something Nikolai needed to feel strong again. Something to destroy his enemy with. Renata moved herself closer and twined her hands through Nikolai's hair. He sighed at the feeling of her fingers, both for the comfort of them and for the fact that even though he was fading, he was still real enough for her to hold on to. Renata's lips parted. He could taste a hint of something sweet. The memory of black tea swirled with lemon and two lumps of sugar, what Renata drank every day. Nikolai pressed his mouth harder against Renata's, and she let out a gasp as his tongue found hers. As he kissed her, he drew energy from her, and it too tasted of sugar and lemon and tea. Black tea, strong and hot. Renata slid her hands from his hair, down the nape of his neck. Her fingers trailed down the back of his shirt and under the hem. They slipped inside, her palms against Nikolai's back. He quivered, now connected to her not only at their lips, but also through her hands on his bare skin, his shadow blurring into her touch. Her energy poured into him as if from a samovar, and Nikolai drank as if inconsolably parched. He wanted, needed, more. He wrapped an arm around Renata's waist to draw her closer, as if his shadow could merge completely into her. And then, in the next room, a woman yelled at a man and threw what sounded like a pot at him as it clanged against the wall. Nikolai jerked away from Renata and released her waist.
"What are you doing?"
she asked, eyes still half closed. There was a part of Nikolai that wanted to keep kissing her. It was not only the physical wanting, but also the knowledge that he needed more energy if he was ever to be whole again, and Renata was willing to give. But he was still a gentleman, at least in the moments like right now, when he wasn't overcome by the cold in his veins. And that gentlemanly part of him knew he shouldn't kiss Renata any longer. Nikolai rubbed at his temples.
Think. No, don't think. Just...
Renata's eyes were fully opened now.
I'm sorry, Nikolai said. I shouldn't have done that. I took advantage of you. No, you didn't. I offered myself. I knew what it meant, and also what it didn't mean. You don't have to worry about that.
Nikolai reached over and stroked her face.
I always worry about you.
Renata rested her cheek on his hand.
I may never have you entirely, but now I've kissed you, and that was worth it. Don't worry about me. I'm stronger than most people think.
I know you are. For a moment, they stayed like that. Then Nikolai pulled his hand away. It was too tempting to draw her back to him if he remained.
I heard that the Countess is gone again,
Renata blurted out to break their awkward pause.
Oh?
Nikolai cocked his head.
Where has Galina disappeared to this time? No one knows. She went for a walk 2 days ago and never returned. She's probably in London or Paris again. It must be nice to be wealthy enough to do that. Simply go and buy what you need when you arrive.
Renata twisted the folds of her skirt.
Yes, but she didn't tell anyone. Who would she tell?
Cook? The footman? Nikolai asked wryly. The Countess wouldn't think her servants important enough to inform of her whereabouts. The only people she'd bothered to tell in the past, when she'd gone on a trip on a whim, were her husband and Nikolai. The latter only because she'd tasked him with some impossible challenge to master while she was away. But Count Zakrevsky was long dead, and Nikolai no longer resided there.
I'm sure Galina is fine, he said. She's likely scowling at street urchins in London as we speak. And then one day she'll return, and will wish she'd stayed abroad to torture the British orphans instead.
Renata bit back a smile. She'd worked for the Countess for so long, the obedience literally beaten into her, that it was hard for her to accept that she was actually allowed to laugh at Galina's expense now. It was like when Renata had been afraid to eat an apple tart during the game, even though Galina was exiled, because servants were never permitted such treats.
Do it, Nikolai said.
Renata looked up from her skirt.
Do what? Laugh. It's allowed. Besides, if you don't, I'll be offended. I thought what I said was rather funny.
The laughter Renata had restrained came spilling forth.
It's nice to see your smile again, Nikolai said. If only I could see yours, too.
For once, Nikolai did not bristle at being reminded he was a shadow.
Smile or not, right now I feel I could rule the Empire.
Renata's smile faltered.
The Empire? It's a long story. I have time.
So Nikolai nodded and told her. But as he relayed the details, Renata never once pulled on her braids, as she normally did when she was anxious. Only when he finished telling her he tried to kill Pasha, did it dawn on Nikolai. Renata already knew. The taste of sugar and lemon and black tea hit him again. She'd known, and she'd come anyway. Not only that, but she'd helped him. Nikolai should have been happy, and yet his heart felt as if it had been wrapped in chains. It was too bad he didn't love Renata. But he couldn't, for there was only one who could unravel him, and she wasn't here.
Chapter 40 Vika nearly collapsed as she stumbled into Cinderella Bakery. She had just returned from safely depositing the hunted girl at her aunt's dacha near Lake Ladoga. And now the entire night, Nikolai's fate, the attempt on Pasha's life, the pyre intended for Vika, had begun to catch up to her. It was only 4:30 in the morning, but Ludmila's was where Vika needed to be. Her cottage was too empty without Sergei, and the bakery was the closest place to comfort she knew. The door to Cinderella was ajar, and as Vika stepped inside, the scent of yeast and sugar wrapped around her like a favorite blanket, warm and smelling of home. The entire surface of the counter was already covered with the morning's loaves. There was a glass bowl filled with apple jelly, and another with sour cherry jam. The page, an enormous stone oven that took up the center of the bakery, was full with trays of piroshki, and an iron pot of kasha simmered in its hearth.
Vika!
Ludmila sang as she bounced around the kitchen, waving a wooden spoon.
How wonderful to see you! I'm just about to have a snack. Actually, I... Oh, my sunshine!
Ludmila stopped with her spoon in midair.
You look like you've flown through a hurricane of hail. Sit down and
I'll get you something to eat. Cookies. You need cookies.
She pulled out a chair from the small table in the corner and practically shoved Vika onto the seat. Before Vika could say a thing, she'd already pushed a plate of sushki, ring-shaped cookies, in front of her.
Please eat, Ludmila said. No, first tell me you're all right, and then eat.
I'm not going to lie and say I'm all right when I'm not.
Vika poked at one of the sushki.
But I'm alive, which I suppose is something.
Ludmila's forehead creased, and she shook her head.
They ask too much of you.
Vika sighed.
It's my job to do what needs to be done.
But fighting Nikolai again? That was not part of the bargain.
The last time Vika had seen Ludmila was right after Nikolai had threatened to take the crown from Pasha. She had been too busy to visit the baker since. Ludmila would worry even more if she knew all that had transpired in the days that had passed. Ludmila used a long, fork-like stick to pull the pot of kasha from the hearth, but nearly upended the kasha in the process. Vika startled, but managed to cast a quick spell to form a gentle barrier, protecting Ludmila from the pot, and the pot from Ludmila. The baker didn't even notice anything had been unsteady. She set the pot on the counter and began to ladle kasha into bowls instead. A white moth flitted in through a crack in the window and landed in Vika's hair, near her ear. Vika listened to it intently.
That was quick, she said,
once the moth had finished.
Well done. Thank you.
The moth fluttered its wings and took off through the opening in the window again.
Do I want to know what that was about?
Ludmila asked. Vika began to push her chair back from the table.
Poslanik's army found Nikolai.
They did?
Ludmila set down the bowls of kasha so abruptly, some of the porridge spilled onto the tablecloth. This time, Vika didn't bother with a charm to clean it up. She was too preoccupied with the moth's news.
He's staying in Sanaya Square.
Sanaya Square? It doesn't seem the sort of place a boy like Nikolai would leave.
Not the Nikolai I used to know. But this one, perhaps he fits into Sanaya Square just right.
Vika frowned at the kasha. Not because the porridge had done anything wrong, but because it was the most immediate thing in her sight.
So what will you do?
Ludmila asked.
I have to arrest and imprison him.
Nikolai will hate being confined. He only just escaped from the step bench.
I know.
Vika buried her face in her hands.
But he tried to kill Pasha last night.
He did what?
Ludmila flung her hands in the air and knocked a basket of Raspisni Paskalni Yitsa, intricately painted Easter eggs, off the edge of the table.
My eggs!
Ludmila flew out of her chair. Vika conjured a cushion onto the wooden floor. The Raspisni Paskalni Yitsa tumbled onto it, a split second before they would have shattered on the ground. Ludmila crawled on her hands and knees.
You rescued them. Bless you.
There were several dozen, one for each year since Ludmila had been old enough to take part in the painstaking process each Easter of drawing on the eggshells with beeswax, dyeing them to color the unwaxed parts, and repeating the process many times with more wax and different layers of dye until the eggs were multicolored and delicately patterned. Vika crouched to help her and picked up a blue egg decorated with white spirals and a gold serpent in the middle.
The symbols all have meanings, you know,
Ludmila said.
That one is a talisman against evil and disaster. Maybe you should carry one with you when you go after Nikolai.
I doubt a talisman will help against him,
Vika said.
He was powerful before, but now there's something awful driving him, and with the increase in Bolshevnoi Duplo's magic, I'm the only one who can stop him.
She looked at the egg.
It is beautiful, though.
Yes, it is.
Ludmila's eyes brightened.
Nikolai appreciates beautiful things, doesn't he?
Yes.
Vika cocked her head, not following Ludmila's train of thought.
What if you confined him not in an ordinary prison, but in a gilded cage, so to speak?
She tapped the egg in Vika's hand, a little more firmly than necessary.
He was a gentleman through and through, even till the last of the game, and I find it hard to believe some of the old Nikolai isn't still inside that shadow. Perhaps a little kindness will coax him out. I don't under... Oh.
A smile spread across Vika's face. The egg could be enlarged, and Nikolai could be evanesced and trapped inside. Vika could make it comfortable, and as handsome within as the eggshell was without. It would still be a prison, but it would be as pleasing as a prison could be.
Would you be willing to part with this egg?
She asked Ludmila. She nodded.
That egg has been waiting all its life to be called to a higher purpose. Much grander than sitting at the bottom of a pile in my old basket.
Vika pulled her coat off the back of her chair and put it on. She tucked the painted egg into her pocket and headed to the door. Behind her, Ludmila rose from the bakery floor.
You're not going to eat?
Vika turned around.
Oh, I...
Ludmila smiled kindly.
I'm only teasing. I think I can make a dent in this food on my own. You have an empire and an enchanter to rescue. Go, go! Thank you, Ludmila,
Vika said.
I really don't know what I'd do without you.
Vika made her way through Sanaya Square, toward the Black Moth. Before coming here, she'd stopped at Letney Isle, where she'd set Ludmila's painted egg on its side on the ground at Candlestick Point, and enlarged it to the size of a small house. There was no door, and there were no windows, for she couldn't allow Nikolai a way out. It still looked exactly like a Raspisnyitsa, but much bigger. Inside, though, Vika furnished it as luxuriously as she could. Hopefully it would be livable, as far as jail cells went. As for location, Candlestick Point would not have been Vika's first choice, but it was both a big enough space and out of the way, the latter being important, considering she was using the egg to trap Nikolai and needed to isolate him. Now, however, Vika slunk through the poorly lit streets of Sanaya Square. There was nothing fantastical about this place, only the grim reality of poverty and all the struggles and cunning it took to survive it. Prostitutes on the street corner sneered at Vika, as if she were competition they had to frighten away. Performers offered to show her magic tricks in exchange for a ruble, when the only magic was how quickly they could make that ruble, and the rest in the audience's purse, disappear. And everywhere it was dank, and buildings were falling apart, and street lamps went unlit, making the square even more wretched. Vika heaved a sigh of relief when she found the Black Moth, although it was in worse repair than most of Sanaya Square, if that were possible. But this was where Poslanik's messenger had said Nikolai was. She still couldn't feel his magic. His barrier shield was strong. Vika had to hope Poslanik and his army were right. She walked along the side of the inn and charmed open each set of drapes as she passed the rooms, peering in to see if she could find Nikolai. She scanned the entire building, twice. No Nikolai. But what if this was not the entire inn? Sometimes there was a courtyard where the washing was done. Vika evanesced to the other side of the building and rematerialized in a small square of dirty snow, including a wooden tub, a scrub brush, and soap. Molodets, she praised herself for guessing correctly. Here, too, was a squat shack, so dilapidated, its walls seemed propped together only by the mounds of snow at the base of the rotted boards. There were three rooms, two with the curtains open, and one with drapes drawn, with no candlelight inside. She pressed herself against that filthy window. This close, she could feel Nikolai's protections, like thick walls of metal encasing the room. Vika heated the air to sweltering. Perhaps she could attack his barrier by melting it, as she'd done to Peter the Great's statue. His magic didn't budge. Only the snow all around the shack puddled and trickled away.
But there ought to be seams where the door opens, possibly also at the window panes.
Beaker directed her magic to prod where glass met wooden frame. Solid, 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 seam.
All right, let's try this again.
She held her breath as she focused her magic as intensely as a soldering iron. It might not have worked in the past, but now she channeled the amplified flow of power from Bolshevnoi Duplo into this one tiny point in Nikolai's barrier. A corner of his enchantment melted open, and that was all Vika needed. She released her breath and charmed the curtains slightly apart. The moonlight slivered in, and there was Nikolai on the bed, his sharp, graceful silhouette dignified even in sleep. The invisible string in her chest tugged fiercely, and she thought of the myth Pasha had told, about Zeus splitting a hole into two halves, who were damned unless they found their other piece again. It was hard to imagine a pair more damned than her and Nikolai, which made it both inevitable and more difficult to do what she'd set out to do.
"I'm sorry," she said through the window. "But this is for your own good."
Vika focused and dissolved him into bubbles. She cracked the window pane open and watched as his components streamed out into the frigid air.
"To the painted egg," she directed his essence.
The wind picked up and blew him in that direction. Another shape stirred inside the room. Vika startled. Had Nikolai had a girl in there with him? Vika thought of Renata, and her stomach twisted and betrayed how much she still cared about him, how much she hoped that he could still be saved, despite trying to convince herself she couldn't love him any more. The figure in the room hissed and jumped from the bed. A patch of moonlight illuminated her face, and it was not, it turned out, much of a face at all. Nor was it a girl. Vika gasped and evanesced herself away. The last thing she saw was the thing's golden eyes, narrowed with drops of black at the corners, oozing like viscous ink. Chapter 41. Nikolai woke with a shock, his head disconcertingly fizzy. Was it from kissing Renata? Perhaps taking energy from her was less like drinking tea with lemon and sugar, and more like wine spiked with stars. He rubbed his eyes and propped himself up on the bed to get his bearings. He couldn't have been asleep long. His fingers gripped for the sheets, but found themselves in a pile of loose feathers. But not loose, exactly, for although there was no mattress holding them together, they stayed in place in the shape of a bed, as if by magic.
"What is this?"
Nikolai scrambled off the feathers and onto a rug of purple flowers, as soft as the finest Persian rug in the Winter Palace.
"And where is this?"
He spun in a circle. He was inside a room, that was for sure, for there were walls painted blue with a pattern of small white spirals. But the wall was strangely arched, as was the ceiling. Nikolai ran out of the bedroom into the hall. It connected him to a parlor and a small kitchen. No stove or oven, he noted. Both decorated with furniture, as if the craftsman had never heard of nails or upholstery. Rather, there were enormous abalone shells with smooth, iridescent indentations suited for lounging, and lamps powered by glowing moths. And a desk made not of wooden boards, but of a single polished boulder, with volumes about architecture and clockmaking, as well as memoirs of travelers from abroad, lined up on the stone.
"Am I in another dream?" "I'm afraid we're both completely awake," Vika said.
Nikolai spun again. There was no one else in the room.
"Vika? I'm on the outside. I've sealed you in, which also means I can't enter, or I'd risk a breach in the enchantment, and you could escape. You are under arrest for attempting to kill the Cesarevich."
Oh, how foolish to think this was merely a dream. Nikolai let out a long breath. Then he cast a charm that allowed him to see through the walls. The sun was not yet up. It did not rise till rather late in the morning in winter. But there was enough moonlight. And there she was, her hand and forehead pressed against the other side of the curved wall, her eyes closed. Vika didn't look angry, though, as her words had suggested. Was she tired, frustrated, resigned? Nikolai couldn't tell. He crossed the room. He stood only inches from the wall and placed his hand against it, so that it lined up with Vika's, palm to palm, his shadow fingers longer and slightly curled, as if they could cup over the tips of hers. She wouldn't know. Seeing through obstacles was Nikolai's forte, not hers. He wasn't happy that she had trapped him. But then again, she'd captured his heart long ago, so he'd already been her prisoner anyway.
"Where am I?"
he asked.
"In an egg." "In an egg?"
Nikolai laughed despite himself. Vika laughed a little too. A sad laugh, but it was something.
"A raspisnyitsa. A giant one. I can see that."
He glanced up. The fact that this was an egg certainly explained the arch of the walls and the ceiling, as well as the blue and white paint. There was also a long streak of gold that began in the parlor, and probably ran along the entire side of the egg. He'd have to look later. And if Vika's enchantment was strong, which Nikolai did not doubt, he'd have plenty of time.
"A painted egg. It's an interesting choice for a jail cell."
Outside, Vika bit her lip but didn't respond. Behind her, a grey stone pillar rose into the sky, and beyond that, the ice of the Nivar. Nikolai's mouth set in a thin line as he recognized where they stood. Enchanter against enchantress again, at Candlestick Point.
"An interesting choice of location, too," he said.
Vika opened her eyes.
"You can see through the shell."
"Yes."
"How silly of me. Of course you can. I'm sorry. There was nowhere else to put you."
"Fitting, I suppose."
Nikolai wanted to pound his fist against the wall, but then he'd scare her away.
Why couldn't they be together? Why was there always something between them?
And why was that something always the Tsar's game or the Cesarevich's actions?
Clearly, the Tsardom is the problem. Or, more precisely, the ones who have been wearing the crown.
It would be different when Nikolai was on the throne.
"Nikolai?"
He blinked.
"Nikolai!"
He blinked again.
"Pardon?"
Vika pressed even closer against the outside of the eggshell. The corners of her mouth turned slightly down.
"Why are you doing all this? What's happened to you?"
He sighed, the adrenaline of a moment ago now gone as Vika pulled him back to the present. What had happened to him? There was no adequate answer.
"You tried to kill Pasha. Please stop. Find a way to make amends, however you can. Don't you care about us at all anymore?"
Nikolai crossed his arms.
"How could you be with Pasha after what he did?" "What do you mean, with Pasha?" "The end of the game. I just don't understand. You should be with me, trying to destroy him."
Vika shook her head vehemently.
"No, I shouldn't. Besides, you don't know the whole story." "Then tell me."
Vika yanked off her glove, pulled up the sleeve of her coat, and held her arm up against the outside of the egg. An intricate cuff of gold vines encircled her wrist. The double-headed Romanov eagle was affixed to it, its ruby eyes on her like a guard. Not a guard to protect her, though. A guard to watch her. It did not seem like a gift for a beloved, as Renata had thought.
"What is that?"
Nikolai whispered.
"Ownership," Vika said. "I'm bound to serve the Tsardom." "So you're not together?"
Vika snorted.
"You thought I was betrothed to Pasha? I hated him after the game, Nikolai. I suffered from it too, you know. But since then, I've come to understand Pasha and his actions a little more. Like me,
He made horrible decisions in reaction to grief. But he regrets it, and because of that, I've forgiven him. But promised in marriage? No. The only way I belong to him is through the vow I made at Bolshevnoi Duplo. As imperial enchanter, if I disobey the ruler of the empire, the bracelet burns me.
Nikolai's hand went to his left collarbone. He could still remember how it would scorch him. The phantom pain would likely haunt him his entire life. But Vika had a new mark that was anything but a ghost.
If I became Tsar, Nikolai said, you wouldn't have to do Pasha and Juliana's bidding.
His voice grew louder as adrenaline began to rush through him again.
If I became Tsar, it could be you and me together. Imagine how powerful we would be.
Vika shook her head. All right, then. Power did not appeal to her.
We could do so much for the Russian people, you and I. With more and more magic from Bolshevnoi Duplo, we could increase the harvests by tenfold, and no one would ever be hungry again. We could give everyone the finest coats so they wouldn't die in winter anymore. And someday, our magic might be so great that we could cure all the disease in the empire. You don't have to be Tsar to do that, Nikolai. We're enchanters. If Bolshevnoi Duplo's magic is strong enough, we could do those things anyway. It would be more fun, though, if we were Tsar and Tsarina. Fun?
Vika threw her arms up.
You've attempted murder of the Cesarevich and poisoned thousands of others. I may be bound to Pasha, but it's as if you're bound by something else, too.
Nikolai laughed. Perhaps she was right. Perhaps being a shadow was changing him. Vika bit her lip again.
Nikolai, tell me how to help you. Is there something else controlling you? Who, or what, was that at the Black Moth with you?
Merde. Vika had seen Aijana. The thrill of imagining himself as Tsar vanished, and Nikolai rested his forehead against the eggshell wall. He and Vika were both positioned that way now, as if they were sharing an intimate secret, rather than pitted against each other.
That person is my mother, he said. She saw you when you evanesced me. Saw might be too tame a description. Aijana is passionate, to put it kindly. And to put it unkindly? She takes wrongs to me very personally and very violently. She killed my father for making me play the game.
Vika pushed away from the eggshell.
Your mother killed the Tsar. I had no part in it,
Nikolai said. He pressed his fingertips harder into the wall, as if that would somehow draw Vika back. But she stayed where she was, boots planted in the gravel, there being no snow here in Letny Isle's eternal summer.
If you want to help me, Nikolai said, fight with me. We're two enchanters. We'll figure out a way to circumvent the bracelet.
She moved farther away, shaking her head.
It's not right. Vika! No! Your mother killed the Tsar. I have to tell Pasha. I have to go.
And just like that, she disappeared and left Nikolai standing there, alone.
Always, always, Pasha.
Pasha better than Nikolai when they were kids. Pasha demanding the end of the game. Pasha taking Vika for his enchantress by his side. It was only a small consolation that Pasha hadn't also convinced her to marry him. Nikolai slammed his fist into the wall, since there was no one on the other side to scare away anymore. The eggshell didn't even dent, let alone crack or indicate a means of escape. He grabbed a book off the stone desk and hurled it across the parlor. Then he enchanted all the books, and they flung themselves miserably and futilely at the walls, breaking their spines and tearing their pages, until the carpet of flowers was littered with paper and words. Nikolai shuddered. He took in the mess of the room. The beautiful room Vika had created for him. The beautiful prison to which he'd been condemned. But Pasha wasn't the only prince who was good at escaping. Nikolai had found his way out of the step bench.
"And I'll find my way out again," he thought. "But this time, when I get free, Pasha will die."
Chapter 42.
"I'm actually glad I don't know who my real parents were,"
Vika thought, as she rematerialized inside the Winter Palace halls. A czar and a monster had given birth to an enchanter. What horrors might have combined to create an enchantress? Vika bit her lip and tried to shake the thought away.
"Sergei," she reminded herself.
He might not have been her biological father, but he was all she'd needed. She clung to his memory and regained her focus. Then Vika strode toward Yuliana's apartment. The halls along the way were decorated with holiday garlands made of hand-blown glass, too expensive for anyone other than the imperial family. But Vika didn't have time to stop to admire their delicate beauty. She whisked right past them.
"I have something important to tell the Grand Princess,"
Vika said to the guards as soon as she turned the last corner to arrive at Yuliana's doors. The bearded, older one on the right lurched toward her.
"How did you get in here? These are the Imperial family's private residences."
Vika evaded his attempt to grab her.
"The Cesarevich let me in,"
she lied. The guard froze.
"Ah."
Was he thinking that she'd just emerged from Pasha's bed? But if so, what did it matter? Let them imagine what they would. This was important.
"I need to see the Grand Princess,"
Vika said. The other guard, also bearded but much younger, said,
"It's 6:30, mademoiselle. The Grand Princess will have our heads if we wake her for some trifle."
Vika glared at him. She had half a mind to magically toss these guards in the air and cast open Yuliana's doors herself. But in a moment of extraordinary restraint, which she made note of to congratulate herself for later, Vika kept her magic and her temper tamped down and said,
"This is not a trifle, and I guarantee the Grand Princess will have your heads if you do not wake her for it."
The young guard looked to the older one. Perhaps it was the early hour, or perhaps it was the ferocity of Vika's glare, but they nodded to each other. The older guard knocked and slipped inside. She heard him apologize for the intrusion and announce her name to an attendant. A few seconds later, he re-emerged and said,
"The Grand Princess will see you now."
He held open the door, and Vika strode inside. She paused for a moment, though, wondering if she'd come to the right place. The room was far from the tidy sanctuary she'd imagined Yuliana's antechamber would be. Instead, piles of letters were strewn all over the floor, the mess evident even in dim candlelight. Yuliana came in through another door that connected to her bedroom. She wore an elegant silk robe wrapped around her nightgown, and even in the early morning, every ringlet was in its place. Now that was more what Vika expected. In fact, it was likely that Yuliana hadn't been asleep at all, but wide awake and hard at work on something. There was a reason Vika had chosen to come see Yuliana, rather than Pasha, when she'd learned that Aijana had killed the Tsar. Besides the fact that Pasha was still recovering from Nikolai's attack.
"Is something wrong with Pasha? I checked on him an hour ago, and he was sleeping peacefully."
Yuliana sat in the only seat not covered in stacks of paper, the chair at her desk.
"No, no, he's fine." "Oh, then what is it?"
Yuliana said, even more blunt than usual, which was almost forgivable, given the time. Vika stood in the middle of the antechamber, because she hadn't been invited to sit. Not that there was any open place to sit. She did, however, charm several more lamps to light. Her news was too grim to be delivered in the dark.
"Your father didn't die of typhus," she said. "He was murdered."
Yuliana didn't flinch. Growing up in the imperial family probably involved frequent assassination plots against her father.
"By whom?"
she asked. There was a twist in Vika's chest, like the plunging of a phantom dagger. Was she betraying Nikolai by revealing this? But she could not be sure whether he'd been complicit. Besides, Yuliana already hated Nikolai.